We've had a very stimulating presentation, and there's no shortage of problems in the world. And I think Dr. Azur's presentation certainly also, I think, kind of put the ball in our court, metaphorically speaking, that we do, as citizens, have a responsibility, and we do have power within our grasp to do things. So we'll ask our speaker, and I hate to rush him because he's been interviewed off his feet, but we will now have the question period. So there is a microphone up here, and we would ask you to identify yourself by name, brief comments, and questions to the point, that we're not here to editorialize. We're here to engage our speakers. So if Dr. Azur would come forward, please.
Before actually we start the question, I just have one announcement to make. It's a bit personal. We have put together a team of medical relief that goes around the world. This coming year, we are going back to Iraq, as we did last year. We are pretty independent. We try to stay away from any large organizations. So please, if you're interested in getting involved and helping us with our efforts, I'd be grateful if in the end you'd give us your email. Lynn actually would be here. In about 4 months, we are going back there. And if you want it, because this is not the topic of the presentation, in the end, I can give you more information. So please stay around if you're interested.
My name is Henning Mundel. Dr. Azur, okay, this is also not topic of your presentation, but at our table we had a bit of a discussion. This is my preamble. We wondered whether you're originally from Iraq, Turkey, Iran, or Syria. We had different opinions in terms of the time when you came. Somebody thought that's the time that Saddam Hussein was especially rough on Kurdish people. I said, well, in November 93, I was in Turkey, head of an agricultural mission, and we weren't allowed to go to the eastern part. The government refused because of Kurdish unrest and so on. If you don't mind just sharing with us.
Okay, sure. So in 1993, when you were in Turkey, I was in Turkey too, but I was in prison at the time. I was a political prisoner in 1993 in Turkey. I came to Canada. I'm from we call it Eastern Kurdistan, which is the Iranian side. Mm-hmm. But my line of ancestry comes from a great Kurdish philosopher who lived in today, nowadays, is known as Southeast Turkey.
Thank you.
So those borders really for Kurdish nation are very arbitrary. Yes. We don't believe in them. I mean, it's all one nation, but during the Second World War, we got divided between four countries, just perhaps because of the geopolitical and economic issues, unfortunately. So, yes, Iranian side, but have spent a few years in Turkish side as well.
Thank you for sharing. But my re-question to your topic, you mentioned about, you showed us the top six countries in terms of the arms trade and saying that from the Canadian government, we should ask our government about this, which we should. Can you elaborate more to what extent the Canadian government is involved in the arms trade and to what extent its companies, but with facilitating laws?
According to Canadian law, no corporations are allowed to export arms without green light of Canadian government. So there is a clause in the Canadian Constitution that corporations cannot, independent of government, export arms. There is a political process that they have to go through. So to what extent Canadian government have a say, I would say 100%. To what percent they have investment as a government of Canada, I think, if I am recalling correct, don't quote me on that, but I think 46% of the arms industry belongs to the government. That's what I recall from a study that was done in Quebec, actually. Much of it comes from Eastern Canada. Ontario and Quebec are heavily involved in this. As for how and which direction is taking, this is new that Canada is in the top six country of arm exporters. This is a statistic from 2007. There was a study supported by American Congress investigating the arm export globally. And this is their statistic that Canada is the sixth largest one in the world. This is the problem with the government and with a system that does not have a conscience, as simply as that. This is the problem with a system that puts profit ahead of human well-being. And unfortunately, we are not the same nation as we used to claim to be globally. This country is not anymore as much about peace, as much about harmony and global justice. We were among the very few countries that did not let a collective agreement on global warming and greenhouse emission go through in Bali, 2007. Canadian government were among very few countries that did not let this collective agreement to come about. This government is among very few governments in the world that is trying to kill the Kyoto Agreement. So I know it's a difficult reality for us to digest as Canadians, but maybe we should reflect on really who we have sent to Ottawa to represent us, that what decisions on our behalf are taken, which one of us agreed to sell arms to 73 countries on this globe, including countries like Zimbabwe or Turkey or China. I hope I answered the question. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm Trevor Page, and I have a follow-up question on that same topic. thank you for the information on Canada being the sixth largest exporter of arms. That is startling. What do you propose we do about it? You started to say in responding to the last question that we should be considering who we send to Ottawa. Are you saying this can only be addressed through who we elect? Or are there any other movements that are going on since this revelation has been there since last year? I spent the last 30 years with the UN in various parts of the world, and there is a convention on small arms. I don't know whether Canada is party to it or not, but it's actually small arms that kill most people in the world, not nuclear bombs and missiles. So what is it that you're proposing, if at all? I mean, it's very good that you've come out with the information, but are you proposing anything that people can do to say to their government, hey, this is happening and we don't like it. It's not the kind of nation that we want, and you better intervene.
I couldn't agree more. I normally, when it comes to the point of practicality, I am glad that I went to medicine, because in the end of the day, we always measure what contribution we made and how that impacted the person's health. The same concept, I think, applies to global health, to global issues. What is the issue? What can we do about it? How it's going to impact that issue? As far as the arms trade, and especially the involvement of Canadian government, I divide the contribution to two levels: individuals and collectives. Individual level, number one, you should inform yourself. You should know what is going on because it's carried out in your name. Inform yourself. Get the statistic, get the numbers, get the knowledge. Number two, as an individual, develop the capacity of distributing that information. I remember in the past, that's what always we put together our structure. Choose four people around you that you are going to share this information with them. Just one day, a relative, a cousin, a neighbor, a friend, a colleague. Choose just four or five people and relate to them one day. I do that often at my work. Just on a casual basis, I share with them. I say, listen, did you know that we are exporting arms to 73 countries? What do you think about that? How do you feel about that? Do you think that there is something we could do? Gradually, this could expand. When the knowledge is there, the change is far easier than now. If now you go and try to make a presentation about arms trade anywhere, people say, why is it that relevant to me? Just tell me something that really connects with me, relates to me. So expanding the knowledge as an individual in our community is very important, very, very important. Number two, political lobbying works. It does work. If enough of us rise to our politician, these people are paid by us. These people are elected by us. They have no choice but to listen to us. We are not living in Ethiopia. We are not living in Sudan. We are living in Canada. I choose I vote for the member of parliament that speaks on my behalf. And easily, this group of people that are sitting here, I promise you, this limited group of 50 people can choose a cause, and I promise you can make the world's difference to that cause, whether it's arms trade, healthcare, whatever it is. Collectivity, putting our efforts together, and using our mind. For years, people, quote-unquote, who criticized the systems, were marginalized to be these uneducated hoodlums who just psychologically are impaired and trying to look for something to complain about. Now it's a different battle. People who are criticizing the systems are the most sophisticated scientists of this globe, are Nobel Prize laureates in different areas. We are going to gain the upper hand. We are in the process. So please keep the hope. Don't be hopeless. Don't despair that there is nothing you could do. There is everything you could do. Any global change that has been brought to our collective consciousness was in the hand of individuals like you who reflected on the way of life of the humanity and tried to envision a better future. It wasn't the political systems. Political systems were made by us to make the right decision. They never made it by themselves. I hope that they answered the question.
I'm disappointed in your reply because I was hoping you'd say that, well, yeah, this is startling new news, and groups like Amnesty, groups like the Council of Canadians do in fact have campaigns in this. Not that I disagree with informing people, mm-hmm. you should. Not that I disagree with saying to the person that you're going to cast your vote for that you don't agree with this. Of course I agree with that, but I would be hoped that, you know, social action organizations in Canada were as seized as you are, and I am, about this. Yeah. Thank you.
I couldn't agree more. There is a number of wonderful organizations that are working in these areas. And, of course, I mean, considering the crowd that we are communicating together, I am sure that you know well about them, Amnesty International or Council of Canadians or public interest research groups across the country are focused on these issues. If you do Google search, if you just say Canadian arms trade, a list of organizations comes up that are lobbying and focusing to create publicity around that. I personally have come to realize, depending on my availability, there is all these different levels of contributions. If I'm willing to give 80%, 60% of my time, I have to join in a structure, an organization that I could with them, work with them in harmony. If I just have 10, 20% of my time devoted to these social justice issues, then I try to build it into my rest of my life. A discussion around the dinner table, a discussion with the neighbor, a fellow student, a fellow physician, somebody that I could just share 10, 15 minutes and just relay some of this information to them. In the struggle that we are facing for the future of life on this planet, let me tell you that, let me be honest with you. Every single thing counts. Saving a glass of water counts. Turning off an extra light counts. An extra 5 minutes conversation with someone and enlightening them about any of these issues would count. So please, build in social justice activism to your way of life, anywhere that we are, anything that we do.
Thank you for your presentation, Dr. Azir. My name's Al Barnhill, and I really can't argue with anything you've said. I agree wholeheartedly. The previous two questioners raised questions about how, and you're addressing that and on an individual basis, yes. But, you know, the harsh reality of our global trade and economic system are the corporations. And I've been studying corporate exploitation for 10 years, and I can give you hundreds and hundreds of pages of indictments of these corporations, and they're absolutely ruthless. You mentioned Shell and Talisman. That's just the start. I mean, you can go back to Rhodes, all over the world, these corporations. And that's where the real battle has to be waged, is with the corporations. They're the ones who are in bed with the politicians. They're the ones who have the lobbyists. They're the ones that have the power, and they're the ones that have the money. And they have a reason, reason d'être, raison d'être, to persevere. I mean, their very livelihood and their existence is threatened by what you're talking about. How do you control corporations? How do you influence them? And you can talk about shareholders meetings, or you can talk about, you know, sending them letters and so forth. But it's like water off a duck's back. These corporations are impervious and so powerful and ruthless. They kill. They really. There's a whole long legacy of their murders and killings around the world.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with the unbelievable level of power that is concentrated in the hand of corporations and how this power is shared at the political level with the governments. One thing that I want to emphasize, throughout history, change has always been resisted, yet has always found a way to succeed. Always the truth has prevailed. Somehow, the limited group of people with conviction, with devotion, with knowledge, have succeeded to align the human consciousness for a better future. And there has always been these attempts to stop us from that. 100 years ago, when the anti-slavery movement in U.S. was trying to convince the nation that trading humans is not the right way to go, the argument was that the economy would be absolutely destroyed if the slavery is abolished. When 60 years ago in Canada, the concept of equality of women and men's rights came about, there was some powerful resistance to that on behalf of the institutions and the government and the economy. How would you expect us to pay women as much as a man? That just doesn't make sense. How could that be? Yet it happened, yet it succeeded. Slavery abolished. So much of these changes that looked absolutely impossible came about, and they became part of our collective consciousness. What we stand today for, as impossible as it may look to our eyes, I have no doubt whatsoever, the only way that the life would sustain itself on this planet is with this consciousness to shift, for this environment to be protected, for human rights to be protected, for arms trade to be regulated, for consumerism to be regulated, that would come about. This is about our survival. Today, many of us are unaware. Many of us are carrying guns, and we believe that washing our cars once a week is our right. That doesn't relate to you. Why should you have trouble with that? A day would come, a consciousness would develop that would override this kind of consumer habits. And I want to use one more example before I go to the next topic. 100 years ago, it would have been impossible to convince people that the color of your skin should not be the base of your value. Today, even elementary school children know that you cannot discriminate against people because of their color and their religion, ethnicity. So the time would come, and the same perception about environmental and human rights and global issues would develop.
Douglas Mitchell, just wanted to follow up on what you're saying about what we can do. My question relates to what we can't do, and particularly to the issue of tribal conflict, and Afghanistan is first in our minds at the present time, but with your background as a political prisoner in an ethnic situation, and I realize there are also religious overtones to this problem, but I wonder, we despair of what can we do in terms of tribal conflict, and thinking particularly of Afghanistan. Have you any thoughts on that?
As a physician now, I perceive violence differently from what I did before my medical life. The violence deeply rooted in human psyche that is raised in poverty, in lack of education, in a life that has been devalued. A human who has been overlooked for decades of their life. A human whose the most basic needs have been denied, and they have been deprived of every single thing that in this part of the world is taken for granted, turns to violence. Most of the violence around the globe, whether it takes the shape of religious or ethnic or tribal form, is rooted in the social and economic issues. And Afghanistan, Iraq, Sub-Saharan Africa, Sudan, many of these countries are an example of that. For decades, we live in harmony as long as there is enough for all of us to eat. When there isn't enough for all of us to eat, some of us have to gang up about to dominate the resources, to protect it from the rest, to keep it for ourselves. I think this is the undertone of the violence on this planet. I think there is so much that we could do also to help the violence on this globe, but I don't think that military solutions are one of them. Right now, clear example of that, since we are in Afghanistan and in Iraq, what have we achieved? $1.3 trillion is estimated the cost of this war in Iraq. We could have transformed that entire region with that money. What have we achieved with that? Tens of thousands of our troops from all these different Western countries are in Afghanistan. Anything that we hear, the Taliban are gaining momentum by day, and we are pushed to the bases by day. So, clear indication that the military is not the solution. But paying attention to human rights, to environment, to issues of poverty, to education, most likely would bear fruit, because it has in the past experience.
My name is Bev Mindel Atherstone. Thank you very much for your very enlightening talk and your talk of hope. I guess if we're concerned about the conservatives and liberals accepting money from corporations to keep their power base in Canada, then all we have to look to is right here in our room, where we have a candidate for Lethbridge Federal NDP, Mark Sandilands, with us right over there. In terms of the noise and the being able to figure out what's the message and what's the noise, the corporations also control the media. And so I think that's been very evident to us here, even in this group, where we bring in very many speakers from outside, and would like to have more people hearing exactly issues such as yours. I guess my concern is that we are being killed too slowly. And you brought it up in one way by saying that some of our consumption, like our consumption of water, falling into the myth that we need to bathe daily and so on, may be causing us skin diseases. Well, we don't die of skin diseases. However, we do die from food contamination. So I'd like you to talk about the demise of food in terms of the additives, preservatives, MSG, salts in food that are killing us, and our overconsumption, our gluttony for food, which is killing us. We're not paying the $40 for the beef, but it's worth that. But we have been told to consume this amount, and even our Canada Food Guide is telling us we need to eat meat at these astonishing rates. So we have bought into a myth that is killing us. The corporations don't need to shoot us. I mean, we are the ones that are buying all this food, but ultimately it's going to contribute to our demise. Would you comment?
I totally agree with the comments. I am sure that many of you might have seen the documentary of Super Size Me. That was a very interesting and intelligent way of tackling this issue. The amount of additives in the food, the amount of fat, salt, the amount of fast food chains and the rate that they grow at is absolutely astonishing. But at the same time, it's interesting balance. The power structure in the corporate world is so complicated and intelligent. But I always have believed our instinct for survival is more intelligent than instinct for profit. So I believe in one point we'll override them. But back to this issue of the food and the way that this industry has been designed. They try to make sure that we survive long, but they try to also make sure that we have a diseased life. On average, anybody over the age of 64 in Canada is on 8 type of medications. We buy a horrendous amount of medication for the last 2 decades of our life, perhaps last 3 even. So much of these diseases were generated when we were in our teens. Coronary vascular disease. It started perhaps even just a few years of age with the way that the diet goes. Diabetes. So many, even cancer now has become categorized as a chronic disease. So there is a tremendous and powerful industry behind the concept of diseases and food and all those things. And in a sense, they work in orchestration with one another. I mean, right now, the issue of smoking is becoming a dominant issue in North America. There was just some resolution passed in recent days in Calgary that you cannot smoke anywhere in public. There is such a powerful force try to limit smoking in public places. Yet, buying a hamburger from McDonald's, if anything, is going to be more harmful than a smoke of a cigarette. There are studies that show that. I mean, in Super Size Me, there was some physiological investigations. They did some blood analysis of the person who was eating fast food for just the duration of a month. There's clear evidence that it is poisoning our generation. It's a clear evidence that it's making them ill. But again, as you mentioned, it's a slow death because they need us for these several decades to be a chronic consumer of their products. And it's working for them. Pharmaceutical industry is one of the largest in the world. I think it's the third largest industry in the world. Arms trade, energy, pharmaceuticals.
Greetings. Thanks for coming. Great to have you here, and your outline is impeccable. But I have one question. My name is James Moore. I'm sorry. As you're outlining that, you're casting some doubt on the political process as well as the corporations. I think we need to disentangle that. Corporate agenda is totally clear, legal mandate to make money and push all costs outside, the environmental costs, all of the things you're describing. But democracy is a process too, 1,000 years at least, maybe 10,000 of struggle from the divine right of kings to now. And I don't think we should be afraid to take that tool up and use it in conjunction with all of the things you've said. Absolutely. I have one example, which I hope you enjoy. I heard Sheikh Yedi Stelmach talking on the radio last week, and what he said to the citizens was that we should take shorter showers. I heard those words myself, and I can't really disagree with him, but
absolutely, that's a great.
When I heard that, I just had to think about the fact that his government and his ministers have been in Houston in January talking about 5 million barrels a day from the tar sands, where right now it's 1 million. And then in September of 2006, they spoke of 10 million barrels a day. At 1 million, there's a draw of 350 million cubic meters annually from the Athabasca. So this cynicism, this what you're talking about, the signal, like this is the point. We could have filtered that out, but we've got to take that democracy back. Would you agree?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I'm a bit cynical because of my previous experiences. I believe in this country we are left free because we don't have the art of using our freedom. If a day comes that we know what we could do with our lives and with our freedom, I believe there are some new parameters that would come to power at that time. Up to that day, I think we have to focus on developing the art of using our freedom, regaining our democratic rights, being citizens, not consumers, being an active participant of our community, not numbers. I mean, sometimes I reflect on that. Hundreds of decisions are made that have impeccable impact, that they have significant impact on my livelihood, yet I have no say on them. That is not democratic. I have to identify, find ways that I could change that. I could, or I should, and I have to, be an active participant of my community, of my nation, of my way of life. I have to make sure that I am heard, and I have to use the tools that I have in my disposal. And in Alberta, absolutely, I wouldn't agree more that we have to pay attention to the signal just to see what's going on. Those deals, economic deals that are signed. Who in Alberta voted for the exploration of oil sands? Who came and gave us an environmental estimate what would happen if you go after them? Who came and told us what necessities do we have to go after them? Why do we have to finish all this wealth in this given generation? Has anybody reflected on what their grandchildren would use in this province? Just because we can get paid more for it, what would that make to me, this $3 billion surplus? I didn't ask for it. I didn't ask for the $600 rebate in my mail. Yes, I know. I mean, we have been always thought the psychology of being grateful for any free money or free lunch that we can get anywhere. But when we reflect on it, not really. There is nothing free on this planet. Who said that the $600 came to your hand free? Who said that the oil sand money is going to come to our hand free? If I have any compassion, not even for my neighbor, just for my own children, I would have to think twice before letting these kind of economic policies go through. And I hope we, people who are sitting here today, we did that, and I just shared this example for you because I think that, that's the essence of the story. All of you who are sitting here, you are more enlightened than I am. You carry more experience in this way of life than I do. I have no doubt in that. Not just the age, it's the wisdom that you carry. I have no doubt in that. What really we have to do next is make sure that we transfer and we expand that wisdom and that understanding of life. Please stay focused. If you have a pot of water and you distribute it among 20 trees that are starving for a drop of water, you would not help any of them. If you invest in one, if you concentrate and focus your energy, with just a small magnifying glass, you could concentrate the sun's light of 30 degrees to 150 degrees. Please be focused on your effort. If there is an issue that you choose, be strategic, think, reflect. The fact that we are activists does not mean that we have to avoid science and academia. We have to use every tool in our hands to bring the change about. We have to be intelligent in our struggle. We have to be the most educated. We have to be the most brilliant. We have to be the most active person to achieve this change. And it will come about. Think about it. Choose your circle. Choose a group of people that you want to exchange your views with. And you want to help them to elevate their consciousness. And gradually put together even simple action plans. Just a letter writing campaigns on the future of Alberta's economy. A letter writing campaigns about arms trade in Canada. Those things would go a long way. We just have to be strategic and we have to believe in ourselves. It's about us and it's about capacity that we bear in ourselves. And I have no doubt that we'll be successful, as we have been in the past forever.
I think because he's such a nice person, I'll let Bob Anderson have the last question, and we'll make it very quick, Bob.
Well, you're the nice person in allowing me to do this. A very short question that I'm sure could have a very long answer, but in about five or six sentences, could you tell us what some of the things you actually do in Afghanistan are? What is your work actually? Just a few examples. Or Iraq, I'm sorry, that's where you're going. In Iraq.
Yeah, in the end of the day, I should actually tell you a quick funny story. A gentleman was walking on the street and he saw it walking with a friend. And he saw $20 on the ground. And he was worried that what? The next person might see it, huh? So he put his feet on it. He put his foot on it and he couldn't walk now. So he stopped his friend and he started talking about all these irrelevant issues. And in about 10 minutes, his friend told me, he said, you know, we should make it to two $10 bells and then we should move on. So the friend had seen it. So in the end, let's find a practical solution and let's move on. Despite of all of these concepts, in the end of the day, as somebody who lived in war-torn countries for almost 25 years of my life, in the end, what it counts, if you could help me to feed myself, if you could help me to overcome my disease, if you could help me to come out of prison, these very practical, realistic issues. With this in mind, we decided, despite of these political lobbying and all these intellectual movements that we are participating in North America, just to make sure that we make a difference to the day-to-day affairs of the underprivileged world, we put together these missions. Once a year, we go to the third world. This year, back to Iraq. We take as much medication, clothing, anything that we could get our hand on. and we try to put together as much money as we can. We go there, we go to the local clinics, we go to the villages, refugee camps. We see as many patients as we can for these 5-6 weeks that we are there. We give them the medication that we take. If we run into really impoverished families, we give them some money. That really guarantees that at least a Jewish brother of mine, he's a very dear friend, but quite cynical, says, just in case if this political movement didn't work out, let's just do something real. So, yeah, in a cynical way, just in case, if we could not really reach the rest of the planet on time through other processes, we have simplified it and we have made it to two $10 bills. So please, if you are interested, this is what we are going to do. In May, beginning of May, we go back to Iraq. We go to refugee camps, local clinics, villages. We take anything that we could get our hand on, especially medications. And if you have the financial capacity to participate and help us, 100% of the money that you give would directly go. No overhead, nobody's paid. Every single one of us is volunteer. And pretty much we actually possibly pay as much as the donations that we receive personally. We match the money, put it together, buy the medication, buy any other supplies that we think that we would need. Go there. When we are deprived of every single dime that we have, we come back. And actually last year we had to borrow some money to come back because...